Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind.
It was basically a cube with inside of sphere where the points of the cube were touching outside of the sphere.
So this isn't anything that just is limited to the United States. It's a worldwide phenomenon.
That UFO podcast is powered by Zencastr. Zencastr is one of the world's leading platforms for recording and hosting podcasts. Zencastr is a modern web-based solution for high-quality audio and video podcast production. With a full suite of professional tools, Zencastr allows podcasters to quickly and seamlessly record their guests remotely and produce their podcasts in studio quality. Check out the links in the show description to find out more. Support for That UFO podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who are the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped just released their brand new 4th generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right, the 4.0. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive listener offer just for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the promo code ANDYUFO. Enter that at the checkout at manscaped.com. This upgraded trimmer includes a multi-function on-off switch that can engage a travel lock. It also gives you the ability to turn the 4000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. The spotlight would put the Phoenix lights to shame. Did I mention the wireless charging? The new wireless charging system uses electromagnetic induction, which can help battery length last longer. It may not be black budget tech, but it's not far off, folks. Remember, get 20% off and free shipping with the code ANDYUFO at manscaped.com. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
I am George Knapp, listening to That UFO podcast and having one hell of a good time.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO podcast. My name is Andy, and I'd like to welcome Dan with me for this one. How are you doing, Dan? You okay?
I'm great. Thank you very much. How are you?
Yeah, I am not bad. Good to get this one recorded finally, since the listener submissions have been sitting in my Patreon inbox or on the Patreon page since about the 10th of July on this one.
Since the 10th. Well, yeah. It means I bet we've got some quality ones from them.
Oh, there's some really good stuff on there. So hopefully I've managed to get everyone's in. I checked the emails and stuff, and I know they came from all over, but if you've DM'd them or sent them on Instagram or Facebook, then I might have missed it because a struggle to keep up. It really has to be email or on like the Patreon page, because I think I made that one public. It's just really easy to keep them all in one place. But yeah, it's good to get this one finally recorded. Before we get into it though, and what the show is all about, I just want to start by giving a shout out to a couple of listeners who are going through some medical stuff just now. So Derek and Randall, all the best from myself and Dan from the podcast. Keep your chins up wherever you are with things, and we do wish you all the best and you know what you're going through just now. So that's
absolutely
thumbs up from us, and it's good to hear from you guys as well when you get in touch. And that goes for anyone out there who, if you're listening to the podcast and it's getting you through something, which people get in touch with me and tell us all kinds of stuff, then great, glad you enjoy it. And again, I'm sorry Dan's here, but it's just someone to bounce off of, so I hope I can kind of balance out that negativity. I am in the process of uploading a bit of a lost interview. Last year, just over a year ago now, I interviewed Richard Lenny, who is a British ufologist and researcher. They had a lot of audio issues at the time, and a lot of stuff was coming up, and I was doing lots of recording and still finding my feet, and it just kind of fell by the wayside at the time. That one I'm working on just now, and it's going to be up on Patreon tomorrow, which is the 17th of August, which is a Tuesday. That'll just stay on there for a while as an exclusive to them. It's over a year old, but there's some good stuff on there. Rich Lenny talks about, you know, using different night vision scopes and stuff to observe different objects in the sky and what you can and can't use, and some really interesting little tidbits in there as well. A little bit of woo, which is always nice to get into. So that'll be available to Apple Premium and Patreon subscribers as well. Eventually in the coming months it'll come out on the free feeds as well, folks, but that's just an older one that I'm working on to kind of clean up and get out with some extra content. Thanks to everyone anyway who has been able to sign up and support the podcast as the world starts to get some back to some sense of normality. I mean, I say normality, kind of sad as reality is kind of what it is. It's very much appreciated. Keep reaching out to the podcast at ufouapam@gmail.com. Some of your stories and experiences recently have been incredible to read. Coming soon, I will be discussing on a podcast where some of you have asked to share your experiences on air, or you've asked me if I could read them out instead. So if you want to send over any of your own experiences, that would be great, and it'll make up part of an upcoming listener call-in as well. Dan, have you got anything to add?
Yeah, just to say that especially if you're from kind of, you know, USA sightings, South America and Europe sightings kind of dominate the conversation, it would be great to hear some stories from, you know, if you're listening from India or somewhere like that, send in your experiences.
Yep, and I do see we have some listeners in Thailand and Indonesia and other parts of the world. So do you know what? If you have had an incident or a sighting or something like that, get in touch. It would be good, even just to speak to you if you haven't, as part of the listener calling. It'd be good to hear that voice. Listen to my accent, and I managed to host a podcast, so don't worry about coming on and not sounding coherent or whatever.
And I should say that we've been uploading some audio-only podcasts to YouTube recently, and the auto captioning, the subtitles on them, understand you perfectly. So your accent, if anyone complains about your accent, YouTube understands you.
Yeah, one star review that. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, thanks. Oh, remember to like and leave your review on Apple Podcasts as well, folks. Listen, enough about that. This podcast is all about, it's one of our What If podcasts. I didn't steal that from Marvel. I told Dan this months ago, right? I didn't know there was a series called What If in the Marvel Universe, right? I didn't know this was a thing, and then they brought it out. So I think they ripped me off. But anyway, it's the day after Disclosure. So in conversation, I was talking to Dan about, you know, what do you think it would be like if tomorrow we get the stereotypical confirmation? It could be the UFO on the White House lawn. It could be signals from space, you know, whatever it might be. But we get complete confirmation we are no longer alone in this or any other universe. How would the conversation change straight away? You see how it works in the movies, right? But what you don't see in the movies or the TV shows, like, is people going to work the next day, or, you know, necessarily just jumping on a bus, or, you know, how religions react to it. And it's always action movies. So I thought we would have a little bit of a chat of, realistically, what would it be like if we found out tomorrow? How would things immediately change? Not necessarily in the long term. Immediate thoughts on that one, Dan?
It's an interesting question to ask after the past you know, year or two that we've all had. Like you alluded to earlier, the word normality is kind of changing every day. And my idea of how the world would react to disclosure is very different to what it would have been had you asked me this question 2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Dan's getting at the fact we've just all been through a pandemic, and hopefully we're coming out the end of that. But if someone had said to you back in February 2020 or just before that, you know, we're going to go through a global pandemic and there's going to be this number of people die and you see statistics and all that kind of stuff, it would have scared everyone. Like, it would have been a terrifying thing to think of, and you would have had all these questions. And yet here we are, you know, a few weeks after the pandemic started. I was going through a Starbucks drive-through, and, you know, the McDonald's opened up drive-throughs, and those, again, that's from a, you know, first world problems, isn't it? That, oh, you know, McDonald's and Starbucks are shut. But life kind of goes on because you adapt and you get on with it. And I imagine this would be an even bigger subject because this really would affect all of humanity at the same time. But yeah, that's what got me interested in the conversation. We reached out to you, the listener, and just over a month ago, you didn't let us down with a whole ton of ideas and suggestions. So what we're going to do is pick some of those and we'll start talking about them and just kind of interlace them with what we think may happen in that dream scenario of we find out we are not alone in the universe. How would things change? So Derek got in touch with us. He mentions, if you've seen Tomorrow War or The Tomorrow War on Amazon Prime, it's quite an interesting idea. And I had another idea about a podcast, Dan, and remind me to ask you about this later on, about my podcast idea about, yeah, that.
I'll scribble it down.
Yeah, scribble it down. Just a tease for listeners, right? But I've got a really good one that I came up with earlier. But in The Tomorrow War, with Chris Pratt, it's essentially they're watching the World Cup final, and in the middle of the game, people invade from the future. Humans, is it 10 years in the future? And they basically come through and tell people, we need you to come back, come to the future and help us fight an alien invasion, which we're losing, and we need numbers, and the only way to get more people is to bring them from the past. Cool idea. Awesome. So Derek had the idea that, you know what, they could just turn up randomly in the middle of a football tournament, everyone's watching. But he reckoned a few things, that the stock market would nosedive because of oil stocks, so he goes straight to oil. Churches would be open 24/7. Pubs will be busy. People's phones will be engaged as everyone rings family. A lot of people phone in sick, and the doommongers will be in every town preaching from their soapboxes. He did also mention that UFO podcast hits an all-time high for listeners. That would be a nice byproduct of it, wouldn't it? But
you could silver lining to that, just like unveiling scenario.
Do you know what? It's probably not far off that, oh, you know, it's on the news just now, breaking news, you know, we've got confirmation that alien life exists in the world. And I'd be straight in going, oh, I have to go record, okay, just leave the family in the house and be like, Dan, can you get on and record?
Fix the SEO.
You'd have to. So, a couple of good ones in there. Straight away, religion's quite a big one. Dan, how do religions react to the confirmation of life in the universe?
Well, most religions kind of work in the idea of other forms of life into their religions. Yeah. You know, the especially the Eastern ones. Whether it's kind of, it's what we would call, you know, almost interdimensional or ET. But they're fairly used to the ideas, whereas the conversation always comes up. And I don't know if it's because a lot of my friends are Catholic, but it's always a conversation around the Catholic faith and how God thinks we're special. And if more life is in the universe, then it makes us less special, and how they'd grapple with that. I think churches would stay open all the time. And I think they get a lot of people coming to have a kind of a conversation, not even necessarily religious people, but just looking for some calm conversation in what's sure to be a very, very chaotic time.
Do you think it's a bit of an outdated idea that religion would collapse is the usual phrase that would be discussed? Do you think that's maybe a bit outdated now, and that it wouldn't happen, and that more and more religions would be happy to accept the idea that there's something else in whatever way, shape or form that might be?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the Vatican has an observatory, so they're obviously not completely against the idea that something else is out there. and a lot of people think of God in not this kind of anthropomorphic way of a dude with a beard, but more of a kind of a life force. And if that's the case, and just life in general is special, then it works fine, you know?
It's mentioned further down by another listener, and I'll hopefully bring it up at the time as well, but might as well discuss it now. There's also the notion that a lot of religions and others would see aliens as demonic potentially, and we hear about that potentially within the halls of the Pentagon and other governments worldwide, no doubt have people with religious bias that would potentially indicate these things are demonic or angelic in nature. And I just wonder if that's just another way that would be factored or filtered into things, that they're almost devils.
Yeah, I mean, devil is almost just the word that fills the gap, right? The unknowable thing that is bad is the devil.
The label.
Unknowable thing that is good is the angel or God, you know? But it would be really interesting to me for us to start grappling with those things, you know, in a very, very real way.
So, Derek also had the idea of, like in all good movies, some generals would want to use nooks. What do you think about that? Do you think that would straight away be a conversation that would be being had, or is that just Hollywood talking?
I mean, failing to plan is planning to fail, right? So I think they'd have the conversation and there'd be a plan about...
Let's get them ready.
You know? Yeah, I mean, they're always ready to go, right? And the president has someone that follows him around with the briefcase and, you know, they're a moment's notice away. So there'd probably be a plan for it, but I can't imagine it would be the first reaction. I'm fairly sure this is an Outer Limits episode.
So listen, there's a thing though. We have seen this 1,000 times in movies, haven't we? Or TV shows, that the aliens invade and the generals, let's nuke them. You know, Independence Day famously does nuke them to absolutely
In the Outer Limits, it's a test. They kind of threaten the Earth, or they don't respond to them when they try and communicate. And then when Earth fires at them, they just kind of swap the... you know, the missiles away, and then say, well, you were very nice to us, so we're going to take your planet now.
Well, what about what you don't see in movies is they have that back and forward heated debate where some of the guys, usually the scientists, don't want to nuke things, and the military guys always play the, yeah, let's get the nukes out. But would there be a scenario in that kind of real life scenario that someone turns around and says the nukes won't be any use because they turn them on and off when they want? So it's pointless, because that's something we hear about in the subject, but you never see it brought up in a TV show or a movie, that there's no point. They just turn them off.
They always tend to, you know, in a TV show or movie, they would kind of go, it wouldn't work. And then they'd go, but let's try. And they'd find a way to make it work just before the pilot fired the missile. You know, that's how that would go. In real life, I don't think that would happen. I think we'd be more likely to see things like, you know, there would be thought behind it. We've had reports of EMPs bringing these things down, depleted plutonium or uranium shells, wasn't it, in Italy. So I think those kind of tactics would be employed rather than just kind of going for, you know, one haymaker, so to speak.
Yeah. An interesting thought is work, okay? Everyone tends to work some kind of shift or, you know, job if you're able to. And how would that affect things? Like, can you imagine you work in McDonald's, or you work in an office, or you're a, you know, a chef in like a busy restaurant, or, you know, you clean schools or whatever you do, that you still have to go into work the next day, don't you? Like, it's does life just still go on? Because so many listeners I thought were interesting, that people brought up the point that overnight things would change, and, you know, we discovered our innate ability to telepathically communicate. I don't think that changes overnight.
I mean, I know I have an innate ability to run, but I can't just be Usain Bolt with that knowledge, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I just see it as being, I know it's really weird to live in, but again, it goes back to that, let's use the pandemic, that if someone told you that would happen, but, you know, you would still, I still have worked through the whole pandemic just by the nature of my day job, just to remind folks that I do work full time as well. Yeah. And it's like, it's just been a different way of doing it, but you've just had to get on with it during the pandemic. And would it be the same that bus drivers, train drivers, cleaners, high level execs would all still have to go to work? Maybe a day or two of disruption, but
I think maybe it depends on the form that they would take.
I mean, full on alien invasion, Dan, fair enough. Yeah, I'm guessing, no, you're not.
Yeah,
you're not going to work.
If it's an immediate kind of thing, then you'd probably see more like when the incoming missile alert, the false warning was issued in Hawaii. I can't remember the year. It was a while back now, though. Where basically, you know, people just didn't go into work. Though I did read a couple of stories from there where someone did go into work and they had a lovely kind of moment of connection on the rooftop with a stranger that they'd never spoken to from work, as they were expecting this missile to kind of come down and destroy everything they knew and loved. It must have been a really insane moment. So I guess realistically, some people would go to work. And I guess it's a way to do something normal while the world is kind of crumbling around you. And we know that people experience cognitive dissonance. So I think we'd still see some people, you know, cold calling and offering you Sky TV.
Yeah, well, listen, I just have to reach out and ask any Starbucks baristas that in the event of any cataclysmic event, please continue to attend work, because I'm a big fan of Starbucks. So yeah, that's
or at least for me. Put the training manual in a really obvious place so Andy can help himself in the event that you leave the door unlocked.
I wouldn't need a training manual to operate a Starbucks. I'd be more than happy with that. Scott, he talks about communication. So his first thought is around how, as a species, we will choose to communicate with the aliens. We might want to make sure first contact is not made through the military, as what message would that send? So what are your thoughts on that, Dan? It's funny, do you know what? And this gets a little bit on potentially the idea I had for the other podcast, but watching essentially my idea for the other podcast, Dan, that we're going to do sometime soon, is going to be I love watching the first 5 to 10 minutes of alien movies, and I think we've talked about this before as to how they arrive and like how they potentially communicate. You know, Independence Day is like the big build, the satellite images, object comes in through the atmosphere, which takes ages, but I love that. I mean, the effects for the time are phenomenal and they still hold up now, and it comes in through the atmosphere and you see it burning through the different layers, and then they just sit there. You still don't see any beings, and there's maybe half an hour of the movie going by before we get there. They blow everything up and then the little ships come out, and that's where you get the big dog fights, and it's quite a while before you see any beings. Like Will Smith, I think, is the first time when he welcomed Earth, the famous scene, punches alien. That's the first time you see the beings, whereas other films like Arrival,
God, I hope the visitors don't watch that. Like, we would be judged for that. That would be seen as a very galactically racist scene.
Yeah, again, just entirely unnecessary to punch them in the face. Like, but I was going to say Arrival as well. I know that's a favorite of yours.
Yeah, that takes a while for everything to be unveiled.
That's it. The ship's just are there. They just arrive and they sit, and there's a more peaceful, from their point of view, attempt at communication. So how do you think that would potentially go? Do you see it being the old helicopter with the flashing lights attempts, or would it be radio frequencies, and what could you see realistically happening there?
I think you'd find that, you know, kind of similar to Arrival, the areas would be cordoned off, people wouldn't be allowed to get near it. It would be official bodies attempting communication and to figure out what's going on, basically. How much of that we would know? You know, in Arrival, for example, we stick to Amy Adams's character, who it goes into the ship and everything. But if that film was from the point of view of you or me, it just would have been, they're here, and then days of nothing until they disappeared.
What about, though, in the sense that, let's talk about loads of ships come down, so they're based in various different major cities. Okay, we'll go with that age-old cliche. Do countries agree on a way to go about it, or do you think they try their own? Like, do Russia, China, and America sit around a table and say, look, we have to kind of to work this one out together, or do they all attempt their own stuff?
Well, I think a good kind of comparison here would be climate change, right? You know, we have the Paris Accords, we have a lot of different countries agreeing to these kind of targets that will save the planet. But really, what is going to take an international effort? It appears that even in this kind of emergency, some countries aren't playing ball. And there might be reasons behind that. You know, they might not have the advancement or the infrastructure and things like that. But in a moment like that, it's up to it's kind of up to the bigger countries to step up and, you know, open their arms wide, but in a very friendly way. And I'm going to emphasize that because of the goings on at the moment in Afghanistan.
Well, Scott does mention that it potentially could be the UN, but perhaps we would have to elect representatives outside of the normal political process specifically for this task, as the skill set needed would be different. Also, the UN is often dominated by the bigger powers as well. Yeah. Catherine got in touch and she said, straight off the bat, money becomes pointless. Does it, Dan?
Again, I think it depends if they're nice or if they're bad. You know, if we're going to have to return to a barter system because no one trusts the government and everything's fallen apart and all our officials are gone or something, then yeah, probably money's not going to get you very far.
Or if it was Bitcoin and I've not got any, that would be really frustrating.
Oh man, the mining fees and the wait for those to processing times would be crazy. Some transactions take like a week. No good in a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Right. Catherine makes a point. I don't necessarily agree with this in the short term, but I think there's a good discussion here, Dan. So don't spoil this. So we discover our innate ability to telepathically communicate. Straight off the bat, I'm saying that doesn't happen overnight, okay? However, do we open ourselves up to a kind of global enlightenment? It's that dream scenario, isn't it, for a lot of people? I don't know that it's necessarily mine, to be honest, but we discover an ability to communicate and have a bigger place in the galaxy and the universe. And do you think that necessarily happens?
No, because I think we're all in very different places as people, as countries, as smaller groups, you know, as a race.
Without going into the political, you know, the way the world is right now, yeah, without going into like that, it's a fair point, though, that the world is very different country to country, city to city, that we're not all in the same place, like you say, that overnight it's like, do you know what, we should all be getting on. I just don't think that would be the case.
I mean, there are literally some people on this planet who this series of events wouldn't make a bit of difference for.
Who are you thinking?
I forget their name. The uncontacted tribe.
I was going to say, do you mean like the kind of the like people in the Amazon and those kind of tribes that are?
Yeah, there's an island that
society.
A few Christian emissaries went to try and convert them, and it went very badly for the people that visited. And it's just, you know, they got killed by spears, basically.
Oh yeah, yeah. Bow and arrow, was it not?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah. got shot by trying to approach them and talk about God. That's how that one went for them. So, I mean, sad as it was. Catherine also says that she gets to say, "I told you so" to my friends. That's a guilty pleasure. I'm sorry, but I would be that guy as well going, yep.
I've got my t-shirt and patches ready. I told you so.
Yep. They'll be on Dan's page straight away.
But money's worthless, so it'll be free at that point.
Yeah, the economy crumbles around us, but Dan's still asking you to wait 3 to 5 days for shipping if you're based in the UK. She does say, Catherine says, Stephen Greer discovers that while all ferries might be UFOs, not all UFOs are ferries. So there's a dig at Stephen Greer in there as well. In those scenarios, right, you take out the alien invasion type scenario and that there's more of a peaceful type of process. I'm fascinated, and that's one of the reasons I just want things to move forward, not necessarily to a full disclosure, as much as I would love that, but just to get a little bit more info out to knock off, and this isn't directly aimed at Stephen Greer, but just charlatans and frauds in general. Because I doubt any alien species would come down and say, oh, do you know what, we've read David Wilcock's book and it's not very good. Or, you know, Corey Good's talking nonsense. Or, you know, CE5 doesn't work.
It's a good kind of line of questioning, because do those things go away with disclosure? Or do those guys go, they're still lying to you, and it becomes something like Q, and, you know, it stays around in that very kind of dark recess of the internet form?
That's where I was going to go, though. You look at what we've got now with the Tic Tacs and, you know, TTSA and Lou Elizondo, Chris Mellon, and that's not 100% proof of anything, but it's splintered the whole community and the people involved, and it's very telling that a lot of those groups have kind of stayed in their own kind of factions and cliques and all that kind of stuff, that you're not going to get Lou Elizondo and Cody Good and Stephen Greer and David Wilcox round a table all chatting this through, because they're in very, very, very different places.
I'd put my money on Lou if that was a celebrity death match.
Yeah, it would dogfight. Yeah, I'd be all over that. And you'll appreciate this one, talking of dogfights, Dan. Dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the War of the Worlds radio broadcast, right? And like I've said before, I don't think it was quite as widespread as it's kind of reported. But certainly some people had to have experienced hysteria from just a radio play. And, you know, we wouldn't bat an eyelid at that these days. But we kind of have a different form of things, right? So ours would be, you know, Twitter, TikTok, all that kind of stuff. We'd be seeing disclosure through 40-second bites.
Here's one, right? Okay, so we're talking about, you know, we find out we're not alone. What if the scenario, Dan, was, and let's just talk about this one generally because it's a big idea, that we find out, just as a passing glance, Project Galileo picks up a huge spacecraft, you know, like Oumuamua. Imagine we managed to pick up a full 8K image of what was a football-sized or bigger craft passing through the edge of our solar system. It doesn't interact with us, but we pick it up. It's broadcast on live TV. We're not alone. We can't get in touch with it, and it's gone. What happens tomorrow?
I think you, one, immediately have science funneling money into somehow being able to communicate or find where that craft came from and so on and so forth. Suddenly all the attention we ever wanted would be there. People like us, well, I mean, we just double down, right? We're already kind of in the right mindset to want to tackle this. I think people who aren't into the subject, I think it will be one of those things where they're kind of like, wow, that's amazing. And then when Kim Kardashian breaks a nail next week, they'll kind of, their attention would go there.
So that's one thing. Let me pick you up on that, because that's what I think as well. I really do think we're in a place in 2021, if this happened tomorrow, you know, Sky News, CNN, Fox News have got to cover all the bases in America for their different channels. NBC, Good Morning America, whatever you watch, whatever your political affiliations, you know, Australian news, African news, whatever you watch, you see live images of a huge alien craft or something that's definitely not from here, but it's way, way, way out in the solar system. We pick it up and it just goes past. I think pretty quickly people go back to, I'm watching Love Island or, you know, what's on Netflix, or I think there'll be a massive part of society that go, oh, cool, and just move on. And I don't know if it's that, I don't know if it's something that social media has contributed to massively, that it's bite-sized chunks and it's got to be fast information, like, okay, it's got to be followed up now, you know, like binge watching, that people no longer can wait a week for a TV show. There's no build-up or payoff that, you know what, I've watched this series for 3 months or 6 months and I'm about to watch the finale. Now it's, I've watched the full series in a day, it was really good. And then you forget about it for a year.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of a testament to what TTSA and Lou and Sean and everyone like that has done to kind of get it to a place where people would see something like that and shrug. You know, I'd say that's kind of what it looks like when the stigma goes away.
It's also part of the battle still just now, isn't it, that we still have those arguments and you see it online. And I think everyone experienced it with the task force report build up as we saw more and more people commenting on threads and posts, which was great, but who weren't necessarily interested in the subject. They were very skeptical, and people who were very much dismissive of it as well, and they came and got involved and quickly disappeared. Because the task force report came out, it didn't say here are the aliens, and it went away. We know there's more to come. You know, there's follow-ups, and we're waiting on that next news drop that no doubt will be sooner than later, I would hasten to add. But there's a lot of people who need that instant news story, news story, news story, bang, bang, bang. Like Jeremy Corbell was doing at one point, where it was quite regular. as big or small as it might be, some people really need that talking point. And when it's not there, they don't want to dig into the history, or they won't want to necessarily listen to a show like this and think about the speculation and think about the ideas. And I appreciate doing the listener call-in shows where you hear people who found the podcast like 3 weeks ago. One of the listeners, sorry, I can't remember their name, but it was only 3 weeks ago that they found the podcast on Spotify based on listening to David Fravor, I think it was, on Joe Rogan, and went looking for UFO podcasts. So people now hopefully listen to this and go, oh, I've not thought of that idea before, or that's interesting. Or they listen and go, Dan and Andy are talking total nonsense, but it's made me think, what if this? And it just changes that, evolves the conversation a little bit for me, which I find pretty interesting. But yeah, I think in 2021, you're right, there's that. But what are the Kardashians doing? What does Kanye think of all this? There are the questions. Bekir got in touch, and he was curious that he would want to know how long that potentially they have been visiting here, if they've been observing us, and what their opinion of the human race is as a whole. Probably best avoiding that opinion question right at the minute. But what do you think about the immediate questions of, do you think people would want to know, like the general public?
I think they would. You know, as much as the attention spans are short these days, people were fascinated before, you know, when in the lead up to the UAPTF report. People really love the subject. They're intrigued by it. They want to know about it. It's just how much attention they're willing to give it, unless, you know, an alien being is on their lawn.
Would you rather that you had option A as we meet an alien ET intelligence, non-human, and they've been observing us and they know all about us? Or would you rather we got total stranger tourists fresh off the bus? They arrive here and they are like, do you know what? We have literally just discovered you and found you.
I think the second one, just because we'd be on an even keel then. But and there are less likely to blow us up to the first. Well, I'm of the opinion that if they were going to do that, that would have happened, you know, a long while ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there are benefits to the first, because, you know, we don't know the history of this planet. There are a lot of things we do not know that they could help us with, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Bekir also adds he's worried about people choosing sides. Even if the aliens themselves said they aren't here to harm us, people would still choose to believe them or not believe them. That's spot on. Yet I think an issue that could be solved immediately is finding out if these objects are a danger to commercial airlines. Should we be concerned about crashing into a UFO on our trip to Cancun for spring break, or do these craft have some super advanced collision avoidance systems on board?
That's kind of where we are right now, right?
Yeah.
You know, we've got the FAA coming out saying that, you know, they are kind of amassing sightings report, and they have a database. And the threat question is really about in our everyday lives, i.e., you know, when Dave Fravor and all the people that succeeded him go up and do their thing, are these things being there just in that alone a threat? And yeah, it's possible, you know, unless we know they have an anti-collision thing, it's something that we really do have to figure out.
I can't remember who I was talking to. Was it in the group with UAP Media or on the Discord chat? Or and I mentioned, it might have been the Discord chat, talking about how, you know, when you're trying to, and you shouldn't swat flies, but you know, with your hand and a fly's flying towards you and you just can't seem to hit it. And so basically yesterday, DJ from Life MMA and NBA was on a live stream with Nathan, who is a Waif Soul, one of our listeners and very good listener too. Always good to hear from him. And Chris Leto, yeah, who has his YouTube channel.
It's a really good chat.
And I mentioned, Dan, something you'd picked up on previously that you've mentioned, but not many people do, is the way the Tic Tac apparently was tumbling when it was above the ocean.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily sitting straight and moving left to right. It was, and you likened it to when you drop your mobile phone and it tumbles out your hand.
That's literally a quote. Alex has said that herself.
That was Alex Dietrich.
Like,
yeah,
when a phone hits the floor, and I kind of likened it. I said, oh yeah, when a rugby ball bounces, you can't really tell which way it's going to go, and it just, you know, looks weird.
Yeah, so I happened to mention that with them as well. So they have a very erratic movement. Like when you're trying to swat a fly, you don't understand how or why it moves the way it does. And anytime you think you're going to get it, or, you know, again, sorry, people who are fans of flies, but, you know, knock a fly with a towel or get it out of the way, you know, it's going to land on the kid's food or something. And it moves at the last minute. And that's the way these objects seem to react, that it's not an issue until the very last second. And then bang, a right angle turn, or it moves out the way, or it accelerates off. And I just wonder, is there some kind of awareness, whether they're biological or non-biological, that it's just not an issue? We literally can't interact with them physically. And that's where maybe the EMP stuff may play a part, with some of them being able to kind of knock them out as such. But so I wonder on that, when it comes to like anti-collision type systems, I don't think that would be any sort of issue with it. I mean, we've got Teslas kind of doing the same thing now.
Kind of. I mean,
to a much lesser standard, the Tesla Tic Tac.
They seem to work pretty well in California, and not much other places. But yeah, you're right. We're talking sufficiently advanced technology. I think this is why people talk about these craft being gifted to us so much, because we think, well, they're so advanced, how the hell are they crashing? And the kind of the interdimensional, I think we spoke the other day about them kind of maybe being a window into here. Windows don't crash into each other. They just, it's not a thing ever worried
about. But that's an assumed infallibility with these objects, that we go, they're so much more advanced and better, they must be perfect.
Yes.
So why couldn't a really advanced civilization that travels from another dimension, another star system, another universe, why couldn't any potential craft still fail? We just assume because it's more than likely, isn't it? That's what it is. It's just an assumption. But why couldn't they still have an issue?
Yeah, and you know, we say that flying in an airplane is one of the safest ways to travel, but they still crash a lot. Yeah. And, you know, we don't find them and things like that. So, and we all know the more advanced our computers get, the harder they are to fix and the more likely they are to go wrong, so on and so forth. So, yeah, I would think that even advanced technology would go wrong.
Potentially.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Carve and April had really similar points, so thank you both. They were curious of how long and how close they've been watching, like you had mentioned before, but they both brought up, do they have historical records, and have they been around to witness mass extinction? God almighty. Have they been around to witness mass extinction events, or potentially have they helped circumvent any disasters that could have happened? What are your thoughts on that, Dan?
That would be really interesting, because I like to think that if I was in a spaceship and a planet was, you know, imploding, that I would save some semblance of that culture. And the best way to do that would be to save some of the people, as many as you could. So I wonder if... It almost makes you wonder if that's happened in the past, where those people would be now, and if they're just kind of, you know, there's all these very, very humanoid races out there that are on different planets caused by literally that, you know, rescue operations, essentially, by the observers.
It's an awful thing to think of, but you know how we always hear how we're on the verge or like the precipice of the next mass extinction event, or we're overdue another ice age or something like that.
Yeah.
That maybe the abduction history from the last kind of 50 to 100 years has literally been, let's take some samples of this species, because from their point of view of time and how they view time, it's literally about to happen. Whereas for us, it could be weeks, years, or hundreds of years away. But for them, that's pretty imminent. So
yeah.
Some of these abductions is literally a case of, let's save some of the species.
And there are kind of some schools of thought as well that wonder if, you know, the visitors kind of hit a reset button for us every now and then, and that we're a grand experiment by them. That's a much more negative one, though.
That's like my example I used ages ago of The Sims, where you've got a couple of different entities and races playing The Sims, and they're watching us, and some are really invested at the start, and then as time goes on, they kind of don't want to play the game anymore, and eventually someone puts it back on and goes, yeah, this isn't really going the way I wanted it to, so Let's start the game over again. I would hope not, but you know, you never know. So yeah, that's some interesting ideas from April and Carve. Next one.
Yeah, sure.
Next one is from Mikey, and he mentions really interestingly, he made some great points, and a lot of them have been brought up already, which is great. But he mentions fake news starts spreading on the internet, which covers every narrative. The internet and its role in what would happen going forward, Dan, how do you see that landing?
I mean, to put it bluntly, am I allowed to swear? It's a shit show.
No.
They would be... People probably remember Heaven's Gate.
Mm.
And you know what happened there with the cult, kind of the suicide cult. And I think we would get a lot of that from the narratives that would kind of go on out there. I could imagine people like Corey Good, David Wilcox, you know, so on and so forth, really doubling down and kind of going the conspiracy route. But that kind of feels surreal to me that they'd go so much worse because aliens would be here for real. But yeah, the misinformation would spread very, very quickly. I think there's a possibility some countries would use their kind of bot farms and things like that to imply they maybe had more information than they did, or a better relationship with the visitors than they did. There would be a lot of political games happening. A lot of people give in opinions where they have no information instead of waiting for the information. Mm-hmm. And I would really hope in that situation that very quickly a kind of a group with a public facing department would be formed where the public could actually be properly informed and have a central repository for everything that's been officially shared.
And Mikey shared a lot of other ideas on there, but he did kind of end it with that over the coming months, things get better. Like with COVID, there's a new normal and we would settle into it. He did also mention, though, just given the timing of it, that celebrations would still be ongoing from England winning the Euros. That never happened. Sorry to any English listeners. But Dan's Welsh and I'm Scottish, so that says it all. Erin, who's all nice to hear from, lots of jostling for influence from world leaders, celebrities, the Bezos, Branson, Musk types, a mix of fear or disbelief and military-industrial scheming for how best to get them to help exploit resources or technology. Medicine, Dan, keeping it broad in general, there's this idea again that any alien race would come down and fix all our ailments straight away. Why do you think that is?
Again, it depends on them, because we're carbon-based life forms. Everything works a certain way. If the aliens came here and they hadn't viewed us before, you know, if they've just bumped into us, they wouldn't have a clue how to treat us, quite frankly. Any other form of life would know how to treat themselves. They would know how to treat things they'd encountered. But anything outside of their kind of experience would be, you know, they wouldn't even know how to fix a paper cut. They'd probably find it fascinating that our bodies heal. It could be a unique ability that we have. We just don't know. So I wouldn't take just assume that that's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I like the idea as well that Eric Rin also mentions, we're assuming that we would be able to communicate at all.
Yeah, that's like, the big one for me.
We'll work it out, or it would be AI, or, you know, we could use lights. But imagine just there was nothing. We just couldn't figure out how to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking to a friend and we were talking about intelligent life and where the kind of the line is for that. And we quickly got to the point that we think communication would be our kind of yardstick, just because without communication, you literally cannot communicate that you're as intelligent. You know, rats might think about the stars for all we know, but we think that they just like the little boxes in labs and things, you know?
Absolutely. Karen had a lot of really good points. One of her questions straight away would be, where are they from and what do they want? So there's an interesting take straight away of what do they want. Usually you assume it's, you know, peace, love and light and all that nonsense. But do you think there would be a massive element of trepidation as to just as human beings, that we would be naturally wary and suspicious, potentially?
Possibly. I think there's almost an intelligence game that would be, it would start playing the second that they reveal themselves, right? Or the second that anyone knew that they were here. We know that the intelligence agencies haven't let this go since as far back as we can remember.
On that thought, Dan, do you know what would be really funny? As if like the aliens landed and came out some kind of ship, and as they walk down the ramp, some general somewhere turns to his friend and goes, "That's not the ones we have got."
Now that's a good film opening.
That would be good, wouldn't it? Oh, that's not the ones we're aware of. Like, but that goes back. We had that conversation recently. I think I asked the question of, do they know about each other? Do different beings and entities have an awareness that, you know, say these others are based here, whether it's our reality or physically on this planet or otherwise, but then that there, let's just use Mars, there are flying saucers coming from Mars, okay? Like, do they know about there's other beings here, or do they know it's just there's a planet with life on it? Or do the others based on this planet know of X, Y, and Z out there in the universe? Like, again, there's an assumed knowledge that, oh, they can answer all the questions, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. We for some reason, we just assume that they're going to be smarter than us. It would be interesting if they showed up and we were on an even keel, or, you know, the opposite.
Would that not be really disappointing?
A little bit.
Are you thinking kind of District 9, where an alien race come down and need our help, and they're like refugees? So you'd be like, ah, we kind of wanted your help, and they're like, no, you have to help us.
Yeah, and I mean, Arrival did that too, right? The point of the aliens visiting was to ask for humanity's help, and then they gave them a machine and basically said in, you know, I think it was 10 years or maybe 50, 100, we'll be back and we need you to have built this for us. In a way, it'd be disappointing, but in another way, it fosters friendship, right? To work together. So I think it might be nice for us to feel useful instead of useless.
Dave Smethurst brings up an interesting point. Again, a lot of the topics have been covered sort of already, but he ponders the idea that rogue nations such as North Korea and Iran would potentially use alien appearance as leverage by threatening to attack aliens. So we are talking about the big superpowers. How do you think those other maybe separatist or smaller nations like that might react?
People tend to react badly when they're left out. I know that. did I give too much away there?
Yeah.
Well, no, that's what being into aliens when you were going through primary school does.
Yeah, true.
But, you know, they do. And there's kind of posturing that goes on. I think there might be a few people that kind of, a few nations that don't step up to the plate, so to speak.
Yeah, potentially. It's an interesting idea as well. I mean, it's not the nicest one, and you kind of go worst case scenario there, don't you? But Dave also mentions that potentially there would be a blow to the scientific credibility or the scientific community having to approach governments for the truth about what might have been going on, and then, you know, about the potential cover-ups that have been going on as well. Do you think, again, in this scenario, we find out what's going on, that governments or those organizations come forward? I mean, let's just say Lockheed Martin's got all the stuff from the US government from 70 years ago. Do they come forward and go, with the US government's approval, okay, here's a technology that we recovered and here's what we've been working on with it? I don't think so.
I hope that they would, if that has happened, because that's one of those moments where it defines trust. The governments or not, and without any kind of organization in such a massive paradigm shift like that, we'll be worse off. So I would hope in a situation like that, one would come clean. But I imagine as soon as they came into the atmosphere, all we'd hear is paper shredders from inside the Pentagon. They can't even keep Lou Elizondo's emails undeleted.
Danielle Gonzalez had some really interesting points. Goes with the threat narrative, which I know isn't a very popular one with a lot of people, but I'll read out what she's got here, Dan, and you can give us your thoughts on it. It's hard not to jump to the big picture and the long view, so here are my thoughts. They are a threat, in my opinion, and we can't stop them conventionally with our current defence capabilities because they can disarm our weapons. But they can't telepathically disarm 8 billion humans if we were to resist their presence. Clearly, they have some kind of program and agenda. Clearly, they see we are in big trouble with the climate, but they are not sharing the tech that could mitigate our problem. Perhaps we aren't evolved enough to employ their tech because it involves a quantum leap in consciousness, and so they're just going to work around us. Are we okay with that?
Maybe, what do you think? Maybe they're just waiting us out. Maybe they see the process happening, they want the planet, and they're just waiting for us to have to deal with the consequences of our actions of a, you know, an industry on a global scale.
So that would be going with the idea that they would experience time in the same way we do.
Yeah,
and they can see the way it's going. Okay. Daniel also mentions about, you know, and they potentially would they use hybridization to benefit themselves. They're here for resources. Explorers are always looking for resources to further their own species and way of life. Again, that was something I went away from over the years, but more recently I've kind of gone back to the idea that the Earth is used as a bit of a fueling station with the abundance of water and hydrogen. I think that's something Lou Elizondo's mentioned, and I know it's quite a popular trope in movies, isn't it, that the Earth gets mined for all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, there seems to be a reason that we're visited, and we don't really understand what that is, whether it's even humanity. The question made me think of the ship of Theseus. I don't know if you remember this. Basically, the idea is that you have a ship, and over time you make repairs to it, and you change out bits. And then, after you've made so many repairs, and you've replaced literally every single bit on the boat, is it still the same boat? And there's kind of no right answer. You can argue this till you're blue in the face with people. But it's what I think of when I think of the hybridization kind of idea, that would you be able to say you saved your race if actually what you did was you hybridized and kind of made a different version? Even if that's happening, I imagine that there's probably disagreement in the species about whether that's the right way to do it. But it would be, I guess, an act of desperation if it was going on, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the label you would put on it, though, as well, isn't it? That, you know, transport started out with a wheel, and you're going to get all the way to spacecraft with ion engines and everything else.
Yeah.
It's still essentially the same idea. You want to get from one place to another, but it's very much a totally different ballgame to what you started with. And yeah, from a species point of view, genetically modifying a species and then, you know, hybridization like that, and is it the same? Yeah. Like, if you went full cyborg DC universe and got bits of you replaced to eventually the point your entire body over hundreds of years was a robot, are you still Dan?
Yeah, exactly. And then again, we kind of do hybridization stuff with, like, Dan, plants as well.
I have to add, your cells do completely regenerate every 7 years, though, don't you? So technically you're not the same person every 7 years.
Yeah, you would
argue that. If you didn't know that one, folks, there you go.
If you were in a philosophy classroom right now, they would love you.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's true. I read that years ago online. So if anyone wants to check that one out for us, thank you very much. Ewood said, I think once the cat is out of the bag and we have a form of disclosure, there would be countries doing everything they can to see if they can lure a UAP and bring it down, shoot at it, or use EMP weapons that he's heard discussed before. Some countries would foul play to get their hands on the tech and gain a head start in the advanced tech developments. Do you know what? You can't even argue against the idea that countries would use that as a who can get the weapons first to have the power. It'd be disappointing, but...
Yeah, I think so too. The one thing we can guarantee after one of these things reveals itself is that people will fight over who owns that thing.
And finally, Simon had, again, some great points down there. He wants to ask, though, Dan, what do you think on the idea that people would rely or turn to their governments to make sure they were kept safe and investigated things further? Do you think people would still have that trust, or seek that kind of comfort from their government, or do things change?
I think a lot of people don't consider the government a valid entity in their lives. We've seen over the past few years kind of that happen. So those people were never going to convince to kind of listen to the government. But the rest of us, I think it depends on what the government does. We know through all of the paperwork we have, through FOIAs by, John Greenwald or work by others, we know there's been a cover-up. That's the most easily provable thing, a cover-up of exactly what is what we don't know. So if the government didn't come out and kind of just say, hey, this is everything we know and everything we gathered, then I think there would be major, major issues with trust between the people and the government.
Cool. That was a good discussion. I enjoyed that. Dan, I want to put you on the spot with last thing. What do you think would be the one area of society that would see the biggest impact immediately from kind of knowing and finding out?
That's a tough question. My gut reaction to that question is science. I think every area of life would be affected, but science would go from, the science of today would feel like we were dragging our feet.
Do you think as a species we would benefit more from, the idea I floated earlier that we detect a craft on the outskirts of the solar system flying on by? Do you think we would benefit more from discovering that and then having time to build on that rather than a species kind of paying us a visit or us discovering another species straight off the bat?
I'm going to rephrase the question you asked because it sounded like you were asking me if a slow drip-free rollout of disclosure would be better than a big reveal. And yeah, I think it would be. I think it would be. There's just simply a lot of people in the world who don't have the time or the interest or the attention span or, a million other reasons. They just might not be connected with the screen. They might not even know that UAP report happened. It takes a while to kind of get everyone on the same page, and this is going to take a while to kind of reveal.
Dan, thanks for joining us again. That was fun. That was a good discussion, and we'll be back soon with another What If. We'll announce that very, very soon online, and there'll be another news pod coming out this week as well. Any closing thoughts, Dan?
Just to thank everyone for their awesome suggestions.
And also the ones that weren't awesome. Thank you. Thanks for getting in touch anyway. And I am really sorry if I've missed you off, but I've tried to get as many in as I can as well. So till next time, folks. That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access the shows ad free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, thatufopodcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's @UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer. More like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little rat. Meditated again and stayed full on meta. Can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. I'm like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. I jumped back and nearly kissed myself. And I climbed out the window after the elf. And I woke up in my bed and there was something on my head. And everything was weird and everything was red. And I called out to my boys. They thought this was noise. They thought it was a dream. They thought it was my toys. They thought it was my problems. And they think I should see therapy. And I don't know what it is because it doesn't really scare me. If you really want to know who I think I'd be, then it's you and me. And her and that and she and that thing over there and what's
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.